Welcome home, Angie.
Thank you.
Well, I think I can report that we've been keeping things rolling here, supporting each other, continuing our practice in on the Zafu and off the Zafu, helping each other out a lot. I know I've been helped out a lot. I don't know what, you know, Zazen was like. It's the, sort of a time in a sesshin where you can be almost anywhere, but maybe things have lightened up a little, more light come in, maybe the clouds are dispersing a little bit. Maybe once in a while you notice where and when you actually are in the moment. I hope we'll be able to talk about that. I was, I had too long to work on this talk. I managed to get it down to like a haiku, practically. Taking out what wasn't necessary, you know. But I really do want to thank everyone for the support and the strength, wisdom to keep this all functioning, and thank all of you who were with Andy. We knew we could count on you. Trust in you. Things would go okay. Sometimes it seems like it would be hard to negotiate. You know, going from our Zazen quiet, I hope quiet, maybe not so quiet sitting, into jumping right in and helping wherever we can in relation with other people. But it didn't seem to be the case. I know sometimes, well, it can be before or after Zazen. When I'm asked a question or when I'm about to say something, I have a hard time finding the right words. I think that's my age, though, really. But when I give a talk, even though I overthink it when I have too much time, I have to trust that it isn't... It's not a one-way thing. There's the call and the response, and the call and response go back and forth too. So I thank you for that. I think I have a lot of things that I wrote down, but fewer than I had before. I guess I could say it's about truth and faith and wisdom. I was struck by, again, this is from my journal, what I was writing in the hammock this summer. This, as usual, doing a lot of Zen reading and poetry reading. This first is from Each Moment is the Universe by Katagiri Roshi. He's a commentary on Dogen's Being Time. That pivot comes back. You know, this is where, you know, it's talking about the pivot and they never got it. Well, I still couldn't explain it. But this is what he says. This is speaking about, usually in the Zendo, but it's speaking about Zazen. Touching the moment means touching truth. When you are touching the moment, you don't know it because there is no sense of you then. What you know is after the bounce, that's what he calls to dualism. As long as you touch the moment, it's wisdom. When you return to the dualistic side and know that you touched it, it's not wisdom, it's faith. This faith is a very important part of my practice. More and more so, as I know less and less, and actually can do less and less in a way. You know, Angie mentioned it the other day. Am I speaking loud enough? No. Okay. I think faith is really important. And I think that it's available. It's, again, it's what I read was when in Zazen, touching the moment means touching truth. When you're touching the moment, you don't know it because there is no sense of you there. Or then, rather. And that's paraphrasing Dogen. So don't worry about it. As long as you touch the moment, it's wisdom. When you return to the dualistic side and know that you have touched it, it's not wisdom, it's faith. I think it's like this. It's something available always. But I think as long as you're having this idea of yourself that's separate from everything else, it's not so available because that's a real narrow focus. So that's why I say I hope things have lightened up, the clouds have parted, more sense of something outside our own skin going on here, our own mind. And he says about this also, which spoke to me now from what I've been doing the last day, whatever task you have in the provisional world, even though you don't want to do it, sometimes you have to do it. He was giving an example of basically being asked / told to be the abbot of a monastery, and he said he knew he couldn't do it. He wasn't mature enough. He wasn't good enough. He wasn't up to the job. He said, you look at yourself carefully, you see that even though people say you are mature, you're not. All you have to do is accept it and do your best with wholehearted effort. And the reason I'm saying this is I've been watching, feeling everything that's been going on here with all of us and sensing that. He said that this is called setting the self out in array in Buddha's world. That array, I had a really hard time understanding what an array was. If I can't visualize something, often I can't understand it or feel it. I can feel it but not understand it, I guess is what I mean. But when I thought, you know, the poem I read about the rock that was holding up the chin, that Violet really opened up for me. That loom of origins, that's an array. The Milky Way, I think, could be called an array. And so we're just little stars in the array. Maybe. But it's always changing, right? The one that fell came from a long time ago. So that's what we're doing, and we're switching out and still being that we're in the world and we're expressing our own self, our true self, original self, that isn't deluded into thinking it's separate. That's the way I think of it. And that's where I think, again, faith. You know, even if you don't remember what it was, what the moment was at all, you know that you've touched it. I'm not talking about what we would call enlightenment or kinsho, because we simply don't talk about that much, if at all. But that's the trust. It comes from our practice. And that's our ability to have compassion for each other, help each other, do what comes next. You can feel that when we go in the world from our place in the stars. It might be that we're still spending some time having memories come up that have their own emotions with them. I think I went through that a few days ago. I was talking about it. Stuff. Maybe that couldn't even be seen as an image or articulated. But it can seem like something we maybe don't want to see. And we talked about that. And it can be really torture during a sesshin. I mean, I remember that. I don't spend, you know, 4 or 5 days at a sesshin going through there. And maybe I've used it up. I don't think so. I don't think I've used it up. It's because it's the same thing now. It's just a rerun. But my first teacher and Angie's teacher, Coben, who, as she has explained, was so kind and so soft. And I could say, for me, embodied compassionate wisdom, not the same way Angie does, but like Angie does. He said, he was talking about warehouse consciousness, and I've studied that a little bit, but not to go into it because I haven't grokked it really. But he talked about that, probably from hearing us in Dokusan talk about all the stuff, you know, that's coming up for us. But probably, and this is also very likely, in fact, it has to be from his own life, his own experience, I mean, of Zazen. Is what he was speaking from. So he said, when you go into a dark room and you light a candle, it's natural to notice a little dust. He probably said that in he must have said that in a talk at Sesshin, or at Santa Cruz Zendo, but I always feel as if he was speaking directly to me. I can't remember, but when you go into a dark room and light a candle is what we're doing. And I quoted this once in San Diego, and David was afterwards said something like, a little dust is like the whole realm of hell or something. Do you remember that? You can imagine that though, right?
Yes.
We can imagine David saying that. Yeah, it can be that too. So I think I just have one more thing that I wanted to mention. I just have two poems, and they seem very different, but to me they are enacting, portraying faith as well as wisdom, and one especially, compassion. The first one is called Self-Portrait in Praise. No, can't find that one. I stuck this in the wrong hole. Anyway, that he was just saying, he's just sitting there and very pleased with himself. He said, I can say that I am the perfect likeness of all things. I hope this one's here. Oh yeah. This one to me is really encouraging, although maybe we'll see what you think. This is from Li Qing Chao. She was one of the very few women's poets that we have records of that, you know, were actually preserved, I mean, in paper up until now. They usually, you know, it was, you know, men that decided what to save and not to save, what to put in anthologies. But there are a strong line of women poets, just amazing women poets. It's like Sappho. It's so tragic. We just have little pieces. But Okay. She was a beautiful, beautiful woman. I think she lost a couple of husbands and had to support herself as a courtesan for many years. And then she grew old, and it's said that she died in poverty. I don't know what part of her life this was written about, but who's with me sitting alone at a moonlit window? There's just the two of us, my shadow and I, under the bedside, and when the bedside lamp goes out, shadow's gone, leaving me abandoned here. Nothing more, nothing more, just this amazing thing, all grief and worry that I am, my very own grief and worry, amazing. I'm hoping there's somewhere to approach that. I'd like to hear what you have to say about basically anything. Questions?
Paul, as your first quote led us to faith, mm-hmm. When I got there, it felt to me like surrender or letting go, mm-hmm. unlike belief, which feels to me like holding on to a story with a death grip.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think faith is letting go. You have to have faith before you let go. Not faith as belief, as Angie was describing, but faith because you yourself have experienced it.
I know it has something to do with jumping off a 100-foot pole or something.
I'm not probably clear does. You'd have to.
I'm not clear on that one.
I think we do that a lot, actually. David?
So, on faith, yeah. A lot is written on that, and it supposedly differs from belief in the sense that belief is sometimes defined as accepting unlikely claims to truth. Mm-hmm. But faith is different in the sense that one trusts and leaps with mm-hmm. doubt possible. Mm-hmm. So that just because you're not certain doesn't mean you don't. You're not in an authentic spot with it.
Yeah.
Which is really is the difference between belief and with me. It makes a big difference. And trust, we've been talking about trust. And that's one of the things I heard years ago, and I've never unpacked it very much, but it's like the big bell when struck just right. So you know there's something there.
You've heard it before somewhere.
And it's real personal, and at the same time, mm-hmm. Everybody's got it.
Thank you, David. Keep going.
Paula? In response to also Dennis's comment about faith versus belief, I mean, I kind of understand the faith idea of surrender and trust, and belief maybe kind of a grasping. But, you know, I know a lot of spiritual people, the rabbi I go listen to, some of my very Christian friends, and I am just, and people who are just contemplative Christians or whatever, I'm just kind of envious that they have this faith, this trust. You know, I kind of substitute the word dharma or, you know, my endless space or something for the word God. But there seems to me, in a sense, a kind of faith, too, in trust in their belief about God or Christ or something. So I'm a little envious. I don't have that kind of faith.
Well, that's why I liked that quote. You know, I've had trouble with that word in the past. I'm now really equating it with trust. And I don't want to get started on word things, because that's, you know, that can lead me off down the rabbit hole. But just as Katagiri said, you're sitting, you've touched the moment, or you could say enlightenment. I think that's what Dogen called it. Even though you don't realize it, I think you know that. And based on that, you can go into whatever needs to be done. And I see that in you.
Well, I do sort of have faith in this process.
Yes, you do.
I think Angie once called it a big slog or something, and I feel every time I sit down, it's a slog. Yeah.
She gave the greatest, the thing she did when we had a service, you know, somebody put the words, would you tell me what we did the other night after Angie left?
We chanted?
Yeah.
The Enmei Juku Canon Gyo.
Yeah, and then she did...
Makukyo, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah. She also... What's the thing she said?
Oh, she dedicated the merit.
She dedicated the merit to you. It was just... we didn't have any dedication of merit going, and we just kind of improvised this thing, and she came up with this beautiful, beautiful dedication of merit, and you were certainly it. But so much hope and concern and love.
Yeah.
And humility and faith.
That's why I got better
at it. We rushed through it too, like
oh, we got
Clearwater does. Breathlessly is how we do it there.
And the intonations too. She landed on the word, you know, may Angie no longer be in pain.
That was so great.
You know, it's good having a jewel in your head too. Pulling off the
stops. That was the moment. Yeah. Yes, Paul.
What you spoke about faith reminded me of. I read in one of Stephen Batchelor's books. He said that his teacher used to say that, what is it? Great doubt, great enlightenment, little doubt, little enlightenment?
It sounds familiar.
Yeah.
Is that a verse right now?
Was that?
Was that Dogen that said that?
Okay.
Could you say it again?
It's great doubt, great, I think he said liberation or great enlightenment. Great doubt, great enlightenment. Mm-hmm. Little doubt, little enlightenment. but it's during a lot of my sitting, I've been thinking a lot about the three, not that I'm supposed to be thinking, but
yeah, right.
Neither are you.
Yeah, I know.
I've been thinking a lot about the three spokes of the Dharma: great faith, great doubt, great determination. Because there will just be these waves of like, oh my gosh, this is just never going to amount to anything. I'm just like, I'm. There's no way I'm ever going to. Oh man, I'm a lost cause. And there can just be this deep sense of utter and complete failure. And that's very tempting. And then I realized that the determination part is just to stay with it, even in spite of all of the fear that can arise in my practice. And then I've been thinking a lot about faith. It seems like it's come up a couple of times now, because I was kind of starting to feel how like faith and doubt, great faith and great doubt, are actually kind of like two sides of the same coin in a way, because it is this letting go and a kind of the ability almost to have a certain faith. I was thinking of it like almost like a faith, like a rock that you drop into the water, you know it's just going to eventually hit the bottom, and that there's this kind of fundamental confidence that I have to cultivate with a certain, almost like certainty, that doubt just cannot shake any longer. And in a way, though, I was realizing it's doubt can sometimes provoke this sense of like wanting to cling to an idea that I'll be okay or I'll make it through. But faith is more like letting go of the whole predicament altogether. And so it's kind of like, it's scarier than doubt, I find. It can be more, great faith can almost be more terrifying than great doubt. But anyways, both of them together kind of provoke, when I really lean into it, I see it's like, you kind of have to have great doubt in order to kind of not settle for anything that the mind brings up. It's like, this is it. Mm. And also you have to have like great faith to be able to let go, in that same kind of motion. I don't think I'm really describing it very well, but.
Well, they say that about opposites.
Yeah.
I mean, Coben would always talk about two sides of the coin, and I go, why is he talking about that? That's such a cliche. And I never understood it. I really didn't. I think, what? I mean, they're opposites. Mm. One's heads and one's tails, I was just thinking about that when I was, trying to think what to say or write down or actually parse what I was doing. I mean... Oh, now I get it. They're all one penny.
The question over there.
Where's the question? Yes, hi.
The pose.
Hi.
What's your name?
I'm Kane.
Hi, Kane.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity to be here. It's so wonderful to see the development of the talk and then the conversation. I just kind of wanted to pick up on what you were saying. And then you said precisely what I recall is one of the teachings that I had received, which is about the coin. And I was having that dilemma about the struggle with faith and doubt. And what my teacher said, he said, throw them both off. He said, renounce faith, renounce doubt, because all of those co-arising opposites arise in your mind and immediately you perceive them, even emptiness, even surrender. You perceive them as that place where you will land and find some place that you can be. And you'll find some security, even emptiness. You'll make a thing of it, and you'll try to be there. And he said, just all of them, whenever they arise, it's not to say one is good and one is bad. He just said, just derobe yourself each time of those and nakedly wake up and practice. He said, if you have a reason to practice, and if that reason is faith, the reason not to practice will co-arise with the reason. And sometimes you'll feel pulled not to practice. So drop all of it and practice for no reason at all, ever. And just entirely don't know why you practice.
Yeah.
And he sort of just like slammed his, you know. And I'm sure he wasn't the first person to ever say it. I'm imagining Dogen saying it in every, you know, Chan and Zen practitioner and Taoist practitioner since beginningless time. It's just sort of like, only don't know. Because I found myself going like, okay, there's an action needed to be able to surrender. But what preceded that need to surrender? Everything was already as it is.
Mm-hmm.
And so that teaching has sort of... I mean, even now my hands sweat, I feel like crying. It takes all the wind out of every dualistic fixation that I could possibly come up with. And yet, for some reason, it's still... sitting still happens. So, you know, thank you.
I agree. Cast off body and mind. Cast off everything and just wait for them to show up. but the faith category was talking about wasn't in sitting. That was wisdom, which we didn't notice. But to in this world where we talk about things, we can remember, and so. He called it faith, but maybe it's something that gets us going in our daily life.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm. Throw the coin out. Everything.
And bridging back to Emily's comment yesterday after about the Heart Sutra, just do it. And I think that's the way, my teacher told me. Just do it, and it doesn't even matter if it's in sun-sized Japanese, just do it, and you'll get it sooner or later. And it's agreeing with that, and there's doubt in there, and there's faith in there. Great.
Hi, Carolyn. Just see your silhouette.
So this discussion and your talk, your talk first, but then the discussion around it, if you use this phrase, wholehearted, and that's what, and then David brought in what Emily said, just doing it, which is kind of what Kane said, just don't have any reason, just doing it.
Yeah.
Wholehearted.
We could throw in expectations too, couldn't we?
Yeah,
Hi, over there.
Yeah, right. And not to argue with everybody, but we should also remember that even with expectations and any number of delusions, the action that comes from wholehearted way and the action that comes from great delusion is the same action. That there's really... we really do have to let go of letting go. That there's no I know in my practice for a long time I actually started practicing in part because I have social anxiety, and I really wanted to figure out just how exactly, if I could meditate enough, I could figure out how to have conversations with people and interactions that felt good. So I was going to do everything just right. And in some ways, the first time I sat down with the idea of getting it all just right, and now when I sit, and when I sit in 20 years, it's the same sitting.
Thank you.